Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. I hope everybody had a week, a good week, a week of holding on to your seats as the world is changing again. And I'm going to let some of the dust settle before we have a session around it. Today we are talking about a topic that it came up at least twice. I know John brought it up once in another coffee hour about, how are we thinking about, beyond experimenting and beyond growing our portfolios of work that we're trying to do, how do we really have a conversation about beyond just pivoting and learning from failure or learning from mistake and say, look, at some point you just need to unplug what you're doing and move on to other things. And so here we are this week. We will have that conversation about unplugging. And I'm just going to give everybody a few minutes to join and see if we can get our normal quorum. Let's see who's here. Hello. Well, there's Joe and Derek who are here. Hi, John. Hi, Srinivas. Good to see you guys. If you are out there listening, please just say hello, join the comment stream. I will try to do my best to paste the questions in. Hello from Canada. Yes, Canadians, welcome to Europeans, Asians, everywhere you are welcome at the Coffee with the Digital Trailblazers. Again, it's just been a crazy week, and we had a little bit of a sidebar here about what's been announced over the last week here from the United States, and we are not going to go there today. I will find a creative way for us to have a conversation when the dust settles just a little bit. But today, we're going to talk about unplugging experiments, products, and businesses. And I'm going to just set the context with this, saying it this way. I remember joining a company. At the time, the company was called McGraw-Hill Construction. Now it's Dodge Data and Analytics. And like every company that I've joined, there were probably eight times more projects in flight than staff that we had to address it. There were four or five key businesses in our portfolio, some bigger than others, some with better growth potential than others. And I just remember our CEO very early in his tenure and my tenure making it very clear to the organization where the company was investing, where the company was sustaining its businesses, and an acknowledgement that we had certain businesses that were in decline and that we were going to manage them that way. And I didn't realize at the time, but I was very appreciative later on when I was anointed to head our transformation efforts. And I said, oh, we have some clear priorities to work with here. Not all are created equal. We have some guidelines about how to think about where we want to apply innovation to. Where do we want to just take what we have and improve things? And it was just really helpful for us because, like every other company, we just had too many initiatives and needed to think through how to address it. Joe, thank you for that announcement. I will start working on this. I don't know why it looks small, but I'll see if I can get something to fix that while we get started. So, my first question, I'm just going to let John go first today. I think this is one of his topics. This notion of the culture of unplugging. John, we've introduced terminology like agile and experimentation, the ability to fail fast, a word that Silicon Valley loves to use to pivot when you realize you need to like keep to your vision, but maybe pivot in your approach. But we're not really good at unplugging. We're not really good at saying, you know what, this product is underperforming and it's time to move to something else. What do you think we need to change in our organizations, in our language, in our approaches so that, unplugging isn't necessarily a bad thing and it's welcomed and it's a good avenue to have a discussion about what our real priorities are. Welcome, John.
Isaac, thank you for having me here. And I think back about all the times that we've invested money on things and then continuing to invest money on things that we clearly should have invested the money on. And so I think that the thing that w the way people get in this situation is that they have a good idea to go invest in something, and then something changes. Like either it takes a lot more time to go build the thing, or maybe their priorities change, or maybe the technology changes. And those three situations often cause the what you have may not be worth continuing to build on. But a lot of people get stuck in the sunken cost fallacy, and they're like, okay, well, we already invested so much in it, let's just continue to go. And I think the real cause of this is people aren't really looking at what they want to do versus what they have. And if they would have a lot more realistic conversations on like what is a real priority and what do we have, and then build a plan from what we have right now, I think a lot of this would people would have a lot more realistic conversations. But instead they look at like what have they built already, not what they have.
So continuing down the path without having a pull-up discussion about what's working, and if it's not working, is it time to pivot or time to pull? I agree with you around that. I think it's just we're not really good at revisiting decisions as frequently as we should be. Let's see, Liz, your thoughts
Yeah,
around
it's
this.
right up my alley, right? I'm all about, I always talk about what's the P in PMO, and I often talk about it in terms of portfolio management. But really, if you think about it, it's all about the strategic management. Sometimes people call it the value management office, the transformation management office, whatever you call it. But having that governance, which I know is not a four-letter word, to regularly, quarterly, maybe take a look at what's going on in your investments, looking at your portfolio of investments across the firm to see where you're putting your bets. And yes, getting rid of sunk costs and also seeing where is this aligned to really where you want to be going as a firm, taking a look at your strategy and aligning your investments to that strategy. That is critical. And also being willing to pivot when something isn't working, right? So part of this of when you're doing a value management office is not only aligning your investments to the goals set for the firm, but also setting aside some money for innovation and also managing that money wisely. So if you're going to do some investments in AI, keep an eye on how much you're actually investing in AI, what you're expecting to get out of AI, and not letting the what do they call it, running away with the money, right? Just keep going and going and going and not really knowing what you're getting out of it, so that you're reaping that benefit and not being, shy about dumping it if it's not working and regrouping on those investments in innovation.
Liz, there's some great quotes in here on our comment stream. I put one in from Jason, in for a penny, in for a pound. I think that was really John's point. And then
Yes.
David's point here is darkest just before the dawn. David, please elaborate on that one. Liz, we might have to have a conversation here about the value organization versus the program management office. And
Love it. Love it.
maybe that's the right term that we have to get grounded on. How do we simplify this? Because I still think, as you know, it's not easy to really have a discussion around value streams that people understand. It's just still sort of a cloudy word, I think, that's out there. But I want to bring Joe and then Derek in. Joe, I'm sure you've seen this before. I want to hear the stories.
I want to talk about it from the perspective of mindset. And if you are the sponsor, the champion, the driver of some
Joe,
initiative, you get emotionally.
you're breaking up a little bit. Is everybody hearing that too?
I am. Yes, I am.
Joe, what I
Okay.
suggest is drop Zoom and come back in, and we'll get you right after. Go
Deal.
ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I think looking at it from the point of view of, when you're looking at it from a strategic point of view, engaging early in the new technology or experimentation, what do you want to do? And looking at the business culture and the stakeholders to buy into it. Too often we see they go after these things. We're really looking back at, does this experiment really strategically align with the mission to fulfill the business and customer needs? But also looking at, are they setting realistic expectations in prioritizing this experiment in the first place? When you're looking at the bottom line and everything that needs to happen is, what's the viewpoint? Is it a vision of the board? Is it a vision of the CEO? Is it a vision of the culture? And the question is, can the culture sustain it once they get into it? And I think when you're looking at it from the point of view of, you want to get into it, you want to try it out, it's a new widget or thing that you think is going to be the greatest thing. The question is it really? And you really have to go back to your people that are going to support it to say, can you really do this?
Setting realistic expectations around experiments. It's a real, I just wrote that down on the board because, I mean, how do you do that, Derek, when in fact it is an experiment? And, part of that is venturing into the unknown and not really sure what you're going to learn and, how to make decisions about what you're learning. So maybe go a little bit deeper around that. Joe's coming right back in right now.
Yeah, so one of the things we're looking at it, and I'll use artificial intelligence as a great tool because everybody was jumping in, not really understanding what it really meant, what it really would affect, or how would it impact the organization, or the risk associated around that. And part of looking at realistic expectations is I'm always a fan of working groups, setting up a small working group to experiment with the experiment to understand how it's going to impact the different business units, what's going to be the benefit of the business units, understand the resources involved from each of those units, and what's the overall benefit going to be once it does get in place and they can use it based on how it was presented itself. And there are too many things that when you get into these new technologies and innovations that people really don't understand and they don't take the time to understand it first. They have to question. The thing is, they shoot first and ask questions later. And we need to change that methodology. And Joe started talking about earlier the mindset, what's it really going to do for me? How is it really going to align with what I'm doing? But all for overall, is it going to fulfill what I need it to do at the end of the day? And these are the questions you need to ask first. And if you ask it in a smaller setting with a working group, it's a lot easier to digest as opposed to the whole business pulling that in with you and then figuring it out as you go along.
Yeah. Joe, let's give you a chance to chime back in here, and then we'll go to Martin and John.
Well, I think I just caught the end of what Derek was saying, and also in the comments, Ashish is pretty much
I love it.
he's hitting the first of my 2 points, which is when it's your baby, you're really invested in it and in the judgment. And so you really have to learn the discipline of distancing yourself from being so invested in an idea or a product or an initiative that you can't see that it's on its way to crashing and burning anyway, and you should cut your losses. But the other point I wanted to make was from a management perspective, the mindset of failure versus learning experience, opportunity, a whole bunch of ways that you can look at this with a more positive light, as opposed to saying, "Oh, this is a failure. Let's kill it," and put all sorts of negative connotations around the effort. It should be, at worst, a failed experiment, and at best, an initiative that isn't played out and needs to be chalked up as a learning experience.
Very cool. Hey, Martin, welcome to the floor again.
Hey, I think one of the key things with this is people get so hung up on the money they've already spent on something. Yeah, and especially the finance, say, well, you've spent $2 million or whatever the amount might be. And yeah, what have you got to show for it? And therefore, people feel they have to carry on and they have to deliver value. And you've got to look at, okay, we've got this far. Forget what you've spent. What's spent is spent. It's not coming back. Whatever you do, it's not coming back. But what is it going to cost you to get to a reasonable point that's adding value? Yeah. Is it going to cost you another $2 million? And are you really going to get your value out of that whole 4 million you've spent? Or is it a case of you need to actually, bite the bullet and say, hey, what's done is done, and it's not going any further without massive more investment. Yeah. And you see it on. Yeah, let's face it. You look at programs like Dragon's Den, and you look at some of the discussions on there. People that invested their life savings and half a million in this product, and sometimes the dragons actually say, "Yeah, our advice. You may have spent half a million on it already, but forget it. You're not going to get your money back. Yeah, stop throwing good money after bad."
There's a great comment here from my friend John, I'm just going to read off. He says, exec leadership needs to make everyone feel comfortable with this. Understanding both cost and potential value will at least partially come up from the team. Directors and managers like to safeguard their work because they look at it as tied to their jobs. Engineers feel like their work is like their baby. I've seen teams fudge numbers or outcomes to keep projects going beyond their useful value. Ouch. That's calling it the kettle black, as I've already seen around this. All of those are truisms. And Martin, do you want to have a comment around that before I give to John?
No, I think it's spot on. It's cultural. The culture of being able to actually experiment with something and fail, the ability to just learn from what you've done and move on to the next thing without getting hung up. And too many cultures and too many large companies, particularly, do not have a culture of failure. Startups are a lot better. And if you look at how many startups, will go through various iterations and pivots. Because they've got so far with an idea and then it hasn't gone any further, but something else has come up and they've pivoted and gone in a different direction. And the great example people always quote around innovation of that is the Post-it note in 3M. That's a fantastic example. They were developing a glue and found it didn't work, but somebody came up with a bright idea. Well, this glue doesn't stick enough, but it's removable. And that is an example of be able to pivot and something like that, but allowing them to actually give up on the original idea.
I lost my train of thought as soon as he said post-it note. I was going to comment on this, but I'm going to cede the floor to John and then Liz and see if I remember what I was going to say. Thank you for that, Martin.
Yeah, and I completely agree with Martin. And I've seen people get into this situation frequently with proof of concepts. And some new technology comes out or some new tools come out, and it's so easy to build something that really kind of has a functionality that you really want, but then it's really not ready for production, or it's not really for scale. And what I've seen time after time is that people do a small investment. And I saw this once in real life at a very large company, and they built a system for journal entries, right? And it was a $50,000 POC to speed up journal entries at a very large company. And by the time that they were done with it on the eighth release of in production and over $1 million, they had this home-built system for journal entries that was way worse than just using their SAP system. And so a lot of times people get into situations, everything looks good, but the investment to really get it to what you need is so much more than anybody ever planned on in the beginning. Another place that I've seen this often is say we build something for one country. Now we have a license to all that source code, and we can go just use that stuff and build it in another country. But when we have honest conversations, we talk to the team and say, "Hey, should we reuse this?" And if you really have an honest conversations with people, they're like, "No, you should absolutely not reuse this. The technology's changed, the world's changed. We should just take our learnings from this and build a new system with everything that's up to date."
Wow. John, I've also seen the reverse of this where experiments get a token investment and a big idea funded by a token investment. And so, you get to the end of that cycle and, you got what you paid for. And unfortunately, you really didn't give the idea enough fuel to really even have a chance of succeed. Maybe that's a different topic. And then going back to what Martin was saying about startups, I remember my thought around this, Martin. When you have a startup and it's VC funded, there's a reason they have this adage of saying, go big or go home. It's because the VCs don't want companies to be limping along. I mean, that doesn't suit them. They'd rather see a company, take a big swing and get their 10x growth or just fold and take their write-off. And other than startups, it just doesn't work. I'm still looking for, what is it that cultures that have to do differently? I mean, we're sort of like dancing around the fire here and saying, Houston, we have a problem here. But maybe Liz, maybe you can comment this, and I'll give everybody a chance too. You're a CEO. What are you saying differently to the staff? To John's point, that says, you know what? Here's sort of the runway that we're going to give.
Well, I mean, When you have so I always talk about governance. Governance is not a four-letter word, and if you read my article on it, it talks about how governance is actually about supporting an initiative. It's the difference between having a dictator and a servant leader, right? Big difference. And people hear the word governance, they hear the word measurement or metrics, they hear the word, failure. They hear those things and they instantly think, I'm going to lose my job, I'm going to whatever. There's all kinds of negative and fear-based stuff around it. If I'm the CEO, I'm going to say, we absolutely have to have metrics. We absolutely have to see results. We absolutely have to have deadlines. We absolutely have to know by when we're going to look for results. And the truth is the truth is the truth. People are not going to be fired for telling the truth. We have to be honest with each other. We have to be on the same team. And we have to be honest with ourselves because if we're not honest with ourselves, we can't possibly be rowing in the same direction. Lying on the balance sheet isn't going to help anybody, right? Fudging the numbers isn't going to help anybody. It's a short-term game for a long-term face plant. So making sure that we're all working on the same team requires incredible integrity and trust. Which is why I was thinking that, from a culture perspective, it really comes down to, are we building that trust with people so that they can actually use the word fail or broken or bug or, criticize the work in an open forum with their teammates and not take it personally. Having
Wow.
to dance around that subject. Not only does it drain the energy of a team, but it also, I will say it, erodes the time to value. It makes things take much longer. There, I said
True.
it. Okay, Joe?
It's that grip people have on that status quo and where they see the their work is the value and not necessarily the outcome that they're striving for. It's some really good points there, Liz. Go ahead, John, and then we'll go to Martin.
And I hear this stuff and I completely agree with it. And so this is where the people that are the leaders have a really big impact. And if they create a culture of fear, and if they are shooting the messenger, people are going to take that messaging and that behavior, and they're probably not going to have honest conversations. But if you can have a culture that encourages honesty and encourages people to really just, be very transparent, like you're going to get a whole lot better information. And if people are having honest conversations, it's all so much better. And if you have people that are just really misstating the state of projects and stuff, it's really bad, right? And you're gonna have a lot of bad stuff.
Hey, John. Hey, Martin. You're
I
the
think,
CEO, Martin. What are you doing different?
well, I think, first of all, I'm going to reinforce the fact it's okay to fail, but do it in a controlled manner. The culture of being able to try something and learn from it is all important. That's what's all around here, because otherwise, as you just heard, the various things, you get people who fudge the plans and fudge the results, and they go into the mindset of just keeping going around projects that should have been killed ages ago and just waste more money. And usually, when that happens, you get to a point and somebody gets fired, or multiple people get fired. So it's really building that culture, making sure that people understand that you do an experiment, you try something, and then you learn from it. But you have to feel empowered to say, this is not working. We need to do something differently.
Wow, you're the second or maybe third person, Martin, to bring up fudging results. And I don't know if it's that black or white. I think it's maybe exaggerated storytelling. Maybe it's, kind of kicking cans down the road and saying the outcome will come later. One of the things I think about here is that every company, whether it's a year long or a yearly strategic planning process or a more fluid, ideation program review that I advocate, we're pretty good at onboarding, creating a process to review new ideas. I think we're just terrible at a process that reviews existing ideas. I just don't think we spend enough time. We don't do it with enough frequency. We don't have, real conversation around the impacts of our teams and our people who are spinning their wheels after something that maybe just isn't working very well. And, that's the essence of my second question. I'm hoping everybody here can chime in on. Most of the people on our Digital Trailblazer calls are facing the impact of the lack of these decisions and are not necessarily the ones driving or not driving these decisions, right? We're the ones that have too much on our plate that you could see that, you have a team or a group of teams working towards something that feels like a dead end. And, we have however many resources and teams and attention and leaders to go after transformation initiatives, and we know we're spread too thin. And so we're not, my feeling is we try to tell this story all the time about, what the impact of resources or, I don't really like the word capacity planning because I don't think we do a very good job of that. But somewhere in here, there's got to be a better way for a digital trailblazer to tell a story and say, we have too many things on our plate. These things aren't working. I want to move people to another area to double down or reinforce the things that are working. I'm gonna call whoever we heard for a while, Joe. Let's bring you back, Joe. How should a digital trailblazer make that escalation so that people are listening?
It's a great question, Isaac. Visualization is we're looking at project plans and how they're progressing to milestones. As you said, we're not really good at capacity planning, but we do have sort of expectations that we set for how long something is going to take. Like Liz, I'll fill in for Joanne here. What's the time to value? When do you think we can launch this project or this product? When do you think we can bring this new service to market? If we are getting there in increments that are smaller and smaller, you should recognize early on, and maybe visually you represent this in a chart, a red, yellow, green chart, or just a time chart that shows progress to the success bar. If you're not making it, if the rate of progress is too slow, you have to make that hard decision. As I think Derek said, you got to cut that one. Take your lessons. What did you learn? What can you salvage? And let's move on and reallocate resources.
Liz, I love your thoughts around this because, as soon as we start getting into either measures
And I
or
hope.
even storytelling, it's again an area that we strive for and find that the actual implementations are far behind what our objectives are in terms of reporting, in terms of visualization, in terms of, setting OKRs and metrics that people can follow. And that's even without having a discussion about the risk of number fudging, as some of you have suggested.
Yeah.
How do you handle this, Liz?
Yeah. So for a client I've been working with recently, we're putting in a value management office. And what we're doing is we're taking a very rudimentary approach to setting up expected benefits with a clear understanding that it's a complete swag because they've never done it before. But we're putting in place 3 and 6 month post-implementation reviews to see how we did, just to get an understanding of how good we are estimating, with a clear understanding that we're not beating up anybody. We're just trying to see, is this really where we got the benefit? Was that, were we good at estimating? Were we bad at estimating? What unexpected things happened? How can we improve our estimating for next time? So again, in terms of value management, on the front end, we're making sure that the initiatives themselves are being aligned to goals and doing the cost-benefit analysis. But on the back end, doing a 3 and 6 month post-implementation review to see what we got out of that.
Liz, that's solid and easy to implement advice, actually. There's no reason organizations shouldn't be doing this, and I'm more in an agile framework, so I'm talking, maybe 3 or 6 months after a major release
Hi.
Something like that. But Liz, I'm just wondering, in the implementation that you're doing, do you have a different team measuring the actuals 3 and 6 months from the team that proposed the swags? Is that a best practice to do something like that?
Well, again, we're doing it as part of the value management office. So it's an independent
That's right, yeah.
office that helps the sponsors and the business set up their cost benefit analysis. We help them set it up, but it's their cost benefit. And so on the back end, when we go to do the measurement, we help them, we help reap that information, but it's usually with the help of the CFO. And so the actuals are apparent or they're not apparent, right?
I'm loving this. We're gonna have to borrow this and work on this
All right,
together. It's just a
stealing my
great idea.
stuff. Okay.
No, I said borrow. I didn't say steal. Derek, your thoughts. How do we have, a real discussion around impacts that when our digital trailblazers are feeling overwhelmed?
Well, I think it goes back, and Liz touched on this. Again, the realistic expectations, but also setting up those time frames. When you're looking at the culture, and like I mentioned earlier, working with smaller working groups to kind of give that look and visibility to see what's the impact of the organization. I mean, the financial cost to even look at just bringing in the product, and then what is it going to take to secure it? Asking what the business risk will be, and then look at the resources it's going to take to make sure you can maintain or contain those business risks as you move forward. And I think the bigger question, once you come out of that working group, is two things. What are some of the quick wins that we can get short term to benefit the overall organization that align with the strategic methodology and processes? But the other question is asked, is the business culture really ready to adopt and engage in this new experiment and this technology to really say it's going to have a bigger impact long term and it's going to be better overall? These questions all need to be asked up front. And I think too many times they're asked after the fact it's being installed. And I keep mentioning the smaller working groups because now we're working with a smaller impact as opposed to taking the whole enterprise organization on this roller coaster ride. I think if we can do that, it's going to be easier. It'll be easier to sell, especially if we identify a few quick hits that we can show. This is going to be the return on investment initially, and this is the long-term investment we can achieve while we get into it long term.
Thanks, Derek. John, I'm going to take my break. And in addition to the comments that you want to share, I'm wondering if you can also comment on, I think the pronunciation is Sila. Hopefully I'm pronouncing this correctly. She has a really interesting point here. In discussing the impacts, she says, do we want to talk about technical debt, platform risks, and maybe missed opportunities rather than talking about, what's the impact on resources? And I think that's a great question. Can you forecast and say we can't get to A, B, and C because we are spinning our wheels going after D, E, and F? And I think it's a really good point. So, John, I hope you can comment on that. We'll go to Heather after that.
Yeah,
Folks, you're
and that's exactly
John, let me
the
do my
new
quick
call.
break. Let me do my quick break and you'll come back. Folks, you're listening to our weekly Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We talk about all the types of things that hit digital transformation leaders in their organization. Today, we're talking about unplugging experiments, products, and businesses that aren't working. This is turning into a very interesting conversation. I didn't realize how big of an elephant in the room this turns out to be. And we're getting into conversations about what leaders aren't doing right, about organizations that support holding on to things that aren't working, maybe even getting into fudging numbers, and then going into some real governance and value management office techniques that Liz is introducing about how to do this the right way. It's a really good conversation. Our discussion next week, I hope you will all join. We're going to do a little bit of a game show, and we're going to talk about key questions for aspiring CIOs, CTOs, and chief data and digital officers. This is going to be a game show where each of us ask one of our peers a question as if we're a CEO or a board member running into a VP or a director in an elevator and asking him some random question. And how do you answer that question truthfully, accurately, simply, minimizing jargon and in a way that's impacting and showing that you are leadership material. And we're going to put that through the test this week, next week. I hope you will join. If you want to be a participant in the game show and join us as a speaker, do let me know. I'd love to have some new people up here next week, and we'll have a little bit of game. Maybe we'll even put some prizes up. So that's next week. Key questions for aspiring CIOs, CTOs, and CDOs. On the 18th, we'll be talking about innovation sparking Horizon 3 innovation strategies. These are the ones that are somewhere between new things, but maybe not complete moonshots. And given all the new technologies, AIs, and other things that are happening in the world today, I think it's important to have that conversation, how we actually bring our organizations together heading into the spring, summer months, and start planning some big new ideas. Those are two of our upcoming episodes. Visit startcio.com/coffee/next-event if you ever get lost, and it will redirect you to the next upcoming event. John and Heather, let's go with John first.
Yeah, Isaac, and one thing I've really found that the problem is a lot of companies really just don't know how people are spending time. Like I was at a round table a couple of weeks ago, sponsored by Atlassian, with senior, tech people from all over Washington. And it's hard to, people want to talk about priorities and what needs to be done, but so many companies really they struggle to know what people are working on. So then the next thing is they struggle to prioritize because it's hard for them to know what all the work that has to be going on. And some of it is the companies are complex. There's also a lot of work that's just kind of maintenance that's not really maybe understood just to keep the current systems going. But if people had a better understanding of where they're really putting time in, then I think they can have a lot better understanding of where they really want to put time in, where they need to put time in.
Excellent. Go ahead, Heather, and then guess who's here? Joanne is here today, so hopefully she'll chime in after Heather. Go ahead, Heather.
One of the things that I'm not hearing with regard to impact is on the user. So everything that we've been discussing is how it affects the organization, how it affects the teams, how should the internal people react, how much stuff is on someone's plate internally. But no one has addressed the fact, and hopefully the problem statement affects a user outside of the organization. But how does it affect them, and what is the impact on them by taking something down? I've been in a lot of situations where I've had to tell users that a product or a service is being sunset, and I've had to deal with something that's being sunset. And sometimes you feel like no one even considered what I was needing or what the benefit to me is. And I think at some point in, a discussion, whether it's technical or otherwise, how is it impacting someone else outside of the organization? And sometimes it's really positive if you can see that. And I reference medications. You have an unexpected positive outcome that a product that you thought was going to be for diabetes is now good for reducing Alzheimer's incidents. So it's recognizing that there is an impact outside of where it's emanating.
I think it's an excellent point, but I think of two sides of that. I mean, your point is that there's a bunch of users, departments that have been promised something that we're now looking to unplug. They're going to be disappointed, and there's probably impact to them. I'm also thinking about the reverse of this, which is, they want to kill the initiative, let it die, and then rebuild it in a completely different shape because they just don't like the direction the company is going and want to fight an approach where they have a bigger stake in the solution than just owning the problem statement. I've actually seen that happen a couple of times where, the organization is building a solution out for them. It's on platform X. The stakeholders really want it built on platform Y, and they sabotage the initiative, hoping that it gets unplugged so they can revisit it and say, we have a better chance of doing this. John loves your point though, and he says Google loves doing this to us end users. That's a very interesting a point around that. Joanne, you're here. Welcome. Try to get you caught up. We've talked a little bit about the culture of unplugging. We've talked a little bit now about the resource impact. Maybe you can get us started on our third question, and feel free to go backwards a little bit. But our third question today is, prioritizing transformation in every business is prioritizing transformation in every business line of business is a recipe for underperformance. We need what needs to be said at the CEO and board level for setting real strategic priorities. So I kind of kicked this off, Joanne, by saying that not all businesses are created equal. Most enterprises have multiple product families and multiple businesses are running, but every one of those GMs and business leaders wants investments, wants money, wants new technologies, wants resources. And if you try to take the sum of, let's do something for everybody, we end up with a peanut butter spread of resources and likely in a situation where we underserve our most important businesses. So I'm wondering if you have some comments or some guidelines on how to do this better.
I do, and I was just perusing the notes, and I see so many words that value aligning value to strategy and time to value. And I'm so enamored with you all that my word
Joanne,
present.
they quoted you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I apologize for being late. I was stuck on a call, a rather important one, unfortunately. That being said, so one of the things that I immediately look at is I don't agree that it has to be a peanut butter spread. I agree more to the point that you may have a variety of people at a board level or at the C-suite level who have differing agendas, but if a digital transformation leader is truly a critical thinker and creative at the same time, you will have not only done your homework, but you will know what the commonality across the needs and wants are. And so it's getting everybody to understand that their goals are actually the same, which is top line benefits like growth, resilience, all value based, and bottom line benefits, which are cost savings and efficiency. So if you use those four or five as your common thread, you can start to sort of bring the perspectives closer together that you're in this for the value being created for the organization overall. And this notion of the value management office or office of value management, which is kind of a better way to put it, you start to use a common metric called value. And what do each of the wants and needs of the individual stakeholders in this group, how do they add value to the overall goals of the corporation for revenue, for growth, for innovation, resiliency, or these days, cost savings, pulling things back? And what can you start to consolidate? What can you start to sunset? And to Heather's point, by the way, of who else are you affecting when you sunset something? My premise and my ethos has always been human in the loop. You have to ask first. If you don't want the peanut butter spread, go and ask the workforce. What are they using? What do they need? Why is it important to them? And in some cases, you'll find that certain users will gravitate to certain things because it's simple, it's quick, and it's easy. Those are not things you want to kill. You may want to build them into something else, but your uplift between what was or what is about to be cut off and what will be has at least that common thread as well. The ease of use, the UI might change, but the learning curve is really, really similar to what you had in the past.
Interesting. I just want to hear more opinions around this. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at the CEO and the board level, is from a strategic point of view, is really having them say, let's just cut bait on this now, and let's look at this as an opportunity down the road. There may be one of the issues where the product that their experiment they're looking at hasn't matured enough, so they're looking to see if they can get it at another version or if the business culture is really ready to engage. The also going back to what Joanne said, the resilience factor, is it going to affect my current resilience that I have today? What the impact is, what's the cost risk, what's going to be the added cost associated with that? All this is going to be important and part of that discussion. But the cutting bait early and recognizing, yes, this is something I do want to pursue, I just can't do it now. Make that realistic expectation. Let's look at this within 6 months. Let's look at this within a year, and then bring it back in when we can really understand how it's going to really benefit our organization.
Excellent. Joe, before, I want to hear your comments on this, but there's another great question here from Sila on the common stream. What do you do when senior leaders keep resuscitating zombie projects because of politics or personal attachment? And just comment, hearing the word value come up a lot in the context of Sila's question, it's so easy to take a spreadsheet and make a hockey stick, when we talk about value. And we talked about people fudging the numbers. It's very easy for our stakeholders to say, this is going to give us 10x growth, right? And and then the whole experience just erodes because everybody is jockeying for how far, how far they can throw the stone. Let's just leave it at that. Joe, your comments and how do you deal with these two things? Both zombie projects and fudging the value estimates. And I see Liz.
Well, look,
Go ahead.
Transparency is critical. Rushing the numbers is probably the worst thing you can possibly do. Lying about or fabricating statistics that show things are on track, or that you're the resolution of whatever problem is just around the corner. That has to be a cultural no-no, right? You really have to discourage that. It's better to forgive mistakes than it is to punish mistakes, but it's the worst offense really is faking it. I raised my hand, Isaac, because I wanted to go back to something Derek surfaced, and that was a level discussion. At the board level, if the board is invested in an idea, if some major initiative, and the project comes before them and the status is represented as whatever it may be. Question the board should be asking is, what can we do to accelerate or remove obstacles that are preventing this project from being completed? And if the answer from the project team is nothing, or we don't really know, that's a really bad signal. It says they're not sure what the problem is or why this is being perpetuated. And that's really where you have to at the board level say, well, then we need to reevaluate whether this is the right strategic direction for us and whether we're putting the right resources into it. So I just wanted to add that to Derek's comment.
Thank you, Joe. We're going to go to John, then Liz.
Yeah, and if you get a project that looks like a zombie project, those can be small ones or those can be large ones. And if like you have if you suspect that something may be wrong, it may be worth calling for an audit on it. And the audit needs to be commensurate with the level of maybe not investment, but the number of people working on the project. And so I was on a really critical project. This is almost 20 years ago. And we almost paused the whole project that had 200 people on it. And we flew in some really, really senior people, and we looked at what were the goals for the project. What's the plan for us to get it over the finish line? Like, how are we doing? And we had an honest conversation about it, and then we reported out the results to the team, and then based off that, we started the project again. But if you don't, if you're on one of these projects that's really is a zombie project, and you don't take a real honest look at it, you're just kicking the can down the road, and it's not helping anybody out. And so sometimes these are really big ones, and then so then you need to find a lot more executive people to do the audit, and sometimes they're less ones, and then it's okay to just to really to rely on project managers or managers to do those audits.
I wrote it down as pull the audit cord when required. Oh gosh.
That's a scary cord.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead,
It's like
Liz.
I see the whole train just lurching. So I put down in here about alignment to strategic goals. I mean, again, as part of value management office or whatever you want to call it, in making sure that you are as a practice, re-looking at how you prioritize projects, taking a look at your strategic goals. Are they tactical enough? Have you actually drilled down from strategy into something that's actually doable and measurable? And then making sure these zombie projects that are resurfacing are reanalyzed against the strategy and relook at the ROI and ask the five whys and put in those checks and balances. Part of what we did again at this new client that I'm working at is that we put in a check and balance that if you put in, you can put together your ROI for a presentation, but you actually have to go through a stage gate where the CFO is going to review it before it comes to the ELT. And she will kick the tires and challenge things. So you can't just like throw things up there and say this. She will ask the hard questions. Where is that coming from? Is that a realistic number? Where did that number come from before it even comes up for review? And then another option you have is putting in staged funding. So if you're not 100% confident, but it's still getting some traction, you can say, okay, well, we're going to give you a limited amount of funding. You can go through your first X whatever, sprints, releases, months, whatever. See what the results that you can commit based on that. And then you'll see if you can still, if we're still going to go forward or we'll, reserve the right to kill it then.
Yeah, I agree with that, Liz. I mean, I think we use the word POC in experiments sometimes to, connotate a technology test or a data test around our experiments. I look at it as a business value test, right? If you don't have good metrics around your startup, right, you're going to get maybe angel money to go, do some pilots and get some research and get some numbers out. But without that, it's really going to be hard to re raise your Series A.
I
And
love
I think,
that business value test. Perfect.
and I think it's the same thing internally. If you start seeing the hockey stick and there's no data backing those, I think you have to fall into some form of experiment or pilot to be able to do that. I think that's a very, very easy answer. But I want to bring Joanne in. And Joanne, I'm going to, one of my litmus tests that I like a asking executives when all I hear is we need to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H is I just simply ask him, what are we not doing? What are we slowing down? And make sure that there's an explicit answer to that. That's a question anybody should be able to ask, given the right audience and time. And they will have an answer. It just might not be a complete answer. So that's my simple, how do you handle this? Ask for what we're not investing in. Go ahead, Joanne.
Well, I agree with you, but I ask a different question first, which is why. I mean, it is really all about the five whys, but in at the same point, I guess I don't necessarily follow the school of thought that says for everything you invest in, you should be getting rid of something that you are no longer going to invest in. Because I believe in the notion of recuperating sunk cost. And what may have been dubbed a zombie project may have been actually a very visionary project. Because I noticed in the chat, Martin had asked, what if the CFO or the CEO is driving a zombie project? Well, what made it a zombie project in the past may have just been a little ahead of the curve. And it's not really zombie. It's more like we live in a continuum of dynamically changing conditions. Markets change regularly. Technology changes regularly. Do I say we all go back to a COBOL project that nobody should ever have even thought of 5 years ago? Well, no. If you're a bank, you're still running some of your systems on that. So maybe reinvesting in what was sunk technology or sunk cost of technology should be revisited. So I tend to look at things like take a breath, step back, and start looking for the common threads that can be pulled, to the degree that if you're asking the question, what aren't we investing in? What's the answer? Not that you're necessarily going to get from the C-suite, but what's the answer that you come up with? And if you float that as a, well, what about this? You may have five other people who go, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Or I didn't look at it from that perspective. I think this is where we start to get into not only the definition of what value is, and it's not something that can't be measured in hard dollars or ROI, but rather to say, what is this doing for us as a corporation in terms of the top line stuff, the resilience, the growth, the revenue, the innovation? It's not all just about cost savings.
Giving me you got the cue up on the five whys, and my thoughts around as I'm looking at the comment I wrote about finding the commonalities. I think somewhere in here is just a pivot about how we think about things, and I'm always looking for product and platform initiatives. That's my version of commonalities. Finding things that have a customer value proposition to it, and therefore it can be thought of as a product, or finding the commonalities across businesses, therefore starting to invest in platforms, and starting to get away from, when we use the word zombie projects. Well, what if there are no projects, right? What if you're I
Exactly.
What if you're only investing in a brand new business? You're building or enhancing a product, or you're building and enhancing a platform, and change the vernacular around this. And now the question
Well,
is, what are the priorities for that product and platform? How are we measuring its value, and how much we're willing to invest in it?
let me give you a very short story because I know John has his hand up and I came in late, so I apologize to everybody. But here's the difference. Think about the relationship between the CIO and the CMO. One of the first things, you have spread that you have to deal with. It always turns into a quagmire. There's too many SaaS systems. You want to get rid of a bunch of stuff. There's duplication of information and data. Let's make a clear distinction on what is the value of MarTech, meaning marketing technology, versus CRM. You deliver value to a customer. How you deliver that value is the marketing side of it. Which can you live without? Probably neither. But if you had to make a choice in a value argument to get that commonality, you'd go for the customer.
I'm sorry. I was just typing away here because we had just too many good ideas for future coffee hours, and I captured three of them. I think it's time to revisit CIO and CMOs. I think we should have a conversation around products and platforms and probably killing projects. It's actually a blog post I wrote about 15 years ago, I want to hear more about the value management office, and that Liz
Sure.
brought that up, and I think you and Martin and Joe all have some good ideas around that. John, I'm going to give you the final word today. Thank you for bringing up this topic this week.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's a topic that's definitely near and dear to my heart because I've seen companies and people get in this trap so many times. And just I was going to say, this is a great conversation about, killing projects, but we almost need a whole nother discussion about killing programs, which can even be harder to kill than the projects. But seriously, I think if people could really take a step back and look at, if what I have right now, and what I need to do is this project something that's really part of the priorities? And if is this a base that I want to continue on, or do I need to really start from scratch again? I think people would be in a lot better situation.
So being able to have honest reviews of your current situation, avoiding zombies and avoiding fudging the numbers. Wow, this really went in the direction I wasn't expecting today. But it just goes to show you this is a difficult problem for organizations. And I'm going to challenge us to keep talking about this, every few months. Our next one will be on the value management office. And the reason is I think we've gotten really good over the last decade about an ideation to vision to value qu equation. We have not been as good at reviewing our portfolio and the things that we're working on, focusing our efforts, avoiding zombie projects, unplugging things that aren't working, stating what businesses are of strategic value where we're investing in. We're just not very good at it yet. So we'll keep harping on that conversation. I want to thank all of you for joining me as speakers. Joanne, Derek, Liz, Heather, John, Joe, and Martin, thank you for joining this week. Thanks for a great comment stream. I got to figure out beyond just the dashboard what to do with these comment streams, because there's some really good comments in here. So I'm going to put that on my to-do list. And on your to-do list, let's just remember our upcoming episodes, our episode next week on key questions for aspiring CIOs, CTOs, and CDOs. If you would like to join the game show, please let me know and let me know that you'd like to speak this week, that week. And on the 18th, we're talking about sparking Horizon 3 innovation strategies. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Everybody, have a great weekend. Stay safe and enjoy the spring weather.